Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Sports City. We are back in the kitchen. Welcome to the Entertainment Show. Okay, the caller number is 929-477-2759. You got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you are here with the chefs. I got my co-host with me. Aaron is in the building. Aaron, how are you feeling this evening?
Let me just tell you, I am glad that it is Friday. I don't know if it's just me, but it feels like it's just been one of those weeks, not just for myself, but for a lot of people. And nothing better to end a tough week with a little sports talk with you. So I am especially excited to be here tonight. How are you doing?
I just took off my blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside. The Kitchen Timeless is alive. I feel some type of way. I feel like you're in a church right now. You're preaching to me. I'm about to catch the Holy Ghost because I feel the same way. Needed Friday to get here. This week has been dragging like crazy. And I'm not that big on this holiday right here, but, I mean, I like it just for, you know, candy purposes and everybody getting to put their masks on, things of that nature. But Halloween is coming right at the doorstep of November. I love November for specific reasons. One reason is it's a heavy, hearted situation. It's the month that I lost my uncle and my dad in the same month. But also, you know, Thanksgiving is a big holiday for everybody around here, too, so I love that. But nevertheless, we are here with a Friday in front of us, getting ready for the weekend to take place. And week 8, I think that's what it is. Yep, week 8. And we got a lot of picks to get into for this coming Sunday morning brunch. But we'll talk about what took place yesterday in the NFL with the Minnesota Vikings taking care of business at home up against a – I don't even know if I say struggling Redskins team and saying that's feasible for the situation, but they're struggling Washington Redskins team out of the NFC East, and for them to win that game 19-9 and not let this one slip through their fingers. And it's interesting because you had the old running back up against the new, because as in recent history, you have the likes of Adrian Peterson being the guy that ran the show up there in Minnesota. And now the running back they have now is a part of MVP contention. A lot of people don't put him in the talks, but they have to consider him in Dalvin Cook. Your thoughts on the game that took place with the Redskins winning by 10, but in a low-scoring affair. I mean, the Vikings winning by 10.
I know you meant Washington. Yep. Yes, another low-scoring affair. First of all, I'm going to say this. You would think with the matchup, with what was going into the game in terms of probably the biggest story, like you said, was Adrian Peterson playing his own team, but you're not in the same division. It's two teams that could be not, you know, headed in more opposite directions. Washington, in a lot of people's eyes, has nothing to play for, if anything, reason to tank. And you would think kind of a meh game, then you go not a lot score-wise. But I actually think this turned out to be kind of an interesting game, and there's a lot of developments, I'll say, not necessarily stories, but that I have seen come out of this game and have been thinking about. So first off, though, I do have to bring up the fact that the Redskins are still playing. They're playing hard. I mean, these are two good teams these last 2 weeks. It shows clearly that they have a defense, that low-scoring games this week, low-scoring, you know, last week looked like some of these baseball game scores that you see, and held San Francisco to 9 points. I must say, I think I heard you ask them, and I'm going to try and get it out of them, those of you who listen to the brunch know that my son Michael picked Washington to beat San Francisco. Now, I know that didn't happen, but he was telling me that he had a feeling about them and they were going to start to kind of step up. So I have to give him a little bit of credit there, and not quite sure what he saw to make him think that. But I do think this is a team that is clearly playing hard. They're on the right track. And I think that they look like they're going to be playing not just for positions, not for just for jobs, but for pride the rest of the season. And I personally like to see that in the team, even if it was my team. And I know you have all this tank for Tua, and like I said, you'll see bailout for Burrow. I'm always happy to see a team, especially a professional athlete, show up every week and just do the best they can. With all this said, the biggest issue is that they need to figure out the quarterback situation. And it sounds like they finally have made a decision. Part of what I think Bill Callahan is doing well there is he's clearly installing a lot of structure that I don't think was there before. And he makes definitive, decisive moves, decisions, and answers, kind of the opposite of what we were seeing from Gruden. And I love the fact that without hesitation, right after that game, he told us he was rolling with Haskins next week. And from what I've seen and read throughout the week from people I've talked to, you know, you know, a lot of people thought he'd be playing for the Giants. He'd be wearing the blue right now. I think that's what he thought. So I feel like there's still a big interest in him in our area. I don't know if you'd agree, but I think he should start. I think he looked awful. I am not saying that he's really done anything to earn a starting job in the NFL, but I have my reasons why I think it is absolutely the right decision, and I think it was critical that not only do you give this kid a week of practice, but that the coach made the decision right away, showed that this is my guy, this is who we're rolling with. So there's not going to be days of questions about who's starting, if he's starting. And you remember what it's like to be 21, 22. It's going to mess with anyone's head. So it has to have an effect on him. But before I get to my reasons for why I think it's a good decision to go with Haskins, I just wanted to see what you thought of the situation to start with Washington, and if you think it's a team that's worth watching, and if you're in the pro Haskins sitting or pro playing camp.
It's a dumpster fire in Washington. Let me just say that. It is a problem down there. One, you mean to tell me, not saying you specifically, but the sport world, that you went out there and reached as far as to Denver, Colorado once again, because this is the same trade that had Clinton Portis in his Rookie of the Year campaign get traded for Champ Bailey, and you do this all over again and go out there and get the likes of Case Keenum after Case Keenum had one of the best seasons of his career in Minnesota. He gets picked up by Denver, doesn't have a good season at all with Denver. You go out there and say he has some magic happen in Minnesota. We're going to bring him to D.C. and see if he has that magic. And there's no weapons for him to go to. You got rid of a lot of the players on the outside to make plays. Some of these players are injured as well. Case Keenum does not look like himself from 2 years ago. Now you have Colt McCoy sitting there, who is a game manager, who made a name for himself in college football in a little bit of his run while he was in the NFL, but not really like a name for himself. He just knew how to manage the game, and then dealing with what he had to deal with in Cleveland, so on and so forth, took a big hit and had to sit out for a little bit. But it's kind of like they stunted Dwayne Haskins' growth here. So I'm not going to lie. I think this is a good portion of time to try and get him to start. You know, they got the Bills this upcoming Sunday on the 3rd of November, followed up by the Jets, which that is a make-or-break game to see who wins that game, if the Jets can come out and win that game or if the Redskins can put up their second win. I think that's the battle for who gets their second win of the season. So this is actually a good, interesting run for Haskins to get his feet wet with more than just the last four games of the season to try and go out there and help this offense. You know, outside of that, I mean, right, there's so many pieces on this Redskins team that have me in question. I mean, how long are they going to try and run Adrian Peterson with no help? Are they just going to watch him just finish his career in D.C. And have a bad, you know, I want to say farewell tour, if you will, kind of like what Fitzgerald was going through last year. Fitzgerald gave it one more run this year, and now the Chronicles are looking decent with Kyler Murray. So I don't know if you know, AP sticks around and wait and see if this train turns around. But all of a sudden, the Redskins look like probably one of the top three teams of being the worst in the NFL at this point in time.
Okay, no, and here's the thing, too, to anyone who's listening, and we'd love to hear what you think, but Ty and I have not discussed this at all, so I did not know that you're in the same camp as I am in terms of agreeing that he should start. Now, I agree with you that if we're talking today, I'd say especially because of the quarterback position, there's many, many problems, but we all know that it starts with the quarterback, that they are one of the worst teams. But can you look at them, you look at Cincinnati, and you look at Miami, who I think no one would argue have separated themselves as the three worst teams in the league. And at least with Washington, you can kind of see a plan. You can kind of see a thought process. All of a sudden, I had no idea when Jay Gruden was there. And I understand that Case Keenum was not given weapons. I understand that, you know, Adrian Peterson has no help. But that is part of why I think that Callahan, especially because from what the reports have said, his main job there, other than to be the coach and to try and start to rebuild this franchise, is to evaluate what they have throughout the rest of the season so they can make more educated decisions. You know, who knows if that'll ever really happen with Dan Snyder at the helm, but that's for another day. You know, going into next year, and at least it looks like now they finally have that direction. They've made some decisions. They know that the future is with Dwayne Haskins. It's not, quote, McCoy, who, yes, you want as your backup, someone on the bench that can help teach, that can come in and manage a game, not lose it for you if you surround him with some talent. But he's not going anywhere. He's not going to help or be the centerpiece when you build your franchise. Dwayne Haskins is. And the biggest problem I had seen with Dwayne Haskins, or I don't know if seen's the right word, but that would concern me come, let's say it was a draft day or something like that, is his lack of playing experience. You know, he did not play much in college. When he played, he clearly did a wonderful job, even though it pains me to admit, playing for that school down there, Ohio State. But he only had a very small sample size, you know, 13 games. So, and I've learned this as an athlete, I've learned this as a coach, and I'm learning this as a parent. When it comes down to it, the only way for an athlete, a person, a child to get experience and valuable experience and learn is through actual experience. There is nothing the Redskins can do to simulate this experience that he needs in practice, in the film room. You know, it's important that they take the maximum amount of time, they learn how he operates as a person, they do everything they can to help him grow, to help add knowledge to his game, help him understand what he needs to. But at the end of the day, he needs experience playing. And I think all he needs, as we saw maybe at Ohio State, is a head coach who has his back, who believes in him. And he's already shown that he's capable of making horrible decisions. He's not accurate. He looks lost out there. But in spite of that, it took Callahan all of 3 seconds to let us know that that's his starter. And that's why I think it's a great idea. And like you said, there's nothing really they're playing for. Their season is essentially over. But again, I mentioned the plan. I think that's what Peterson is there for. I think that's the value they see in him. They don't expect him to be the back that the team, you know, he can put the team on the back anymore. He's not that guy. That was in Minnesota. We were reminded of how many times he did that there last night. But he's the guy to be steady, the guy that you want around the young, impressionable quarterback, the guy that you know is going to show up every game as a professional and run his hardest, and who I think he understands that his time is severely limited, especially there. I don't know how many teams out there would be willing to consider him in a backup role, much less, you know, getting the bulk of the carries, injuries or not. It's a situation he's in. And I think that's where his value lies. I don't think they're too concerned with how many more years they can get out of him, because at this point, I think it's just a bonus that if he is playing well. And I think that you have clearly have something with this defense. It's only been 2 weeks. It's a very small sample size. And who knows how off those offenses were that week. But they're playing. They're showing, okay, they've clearly got some players on that side of the ball. They're hanging tough. And you know, there's the offseason, the draft, to get those players, those weapons they need. What they need now is for Haskins to take these games, learn, get the experience, make the mistakes when they don't cost you. You know, what? No rookie who ever comes in is quote-unquote ready to play. There are some who are more prepared, but, you know, Peyton Manning's first season, he got thrown in there on a team where he didn't have the whole team around him yet, and he put up a lot of numbers, but they were not great numbers. And the team, I think, won 1-15, but that I can't imagine what that year of experience did for him. So that's the main reason I think it's really important that they're starting Haskins. So, sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I'm all ears on everything that you said, but it's one thing that I am, you know, missing is on the other side of the ball, too, you know, especially with what the Redskins did their job both sides of the ball. I mean, they only amounted 9 points, but to hold this Minnesota offense to 19 points, and the lone touchdown came from the guy that I was talking about earlier was in Dalvin Cook. I mean, I want to know your thoughts on the Dalvin Cook situation. Should he be getting more consideration? And not to take too much away from the Redskins, but I don't want to hang too much negative on them because they're going to have to try and turn this around sooner or later, but it doesn't get easier for them in the schedule.
Oh, you're completely right. And, you know, I guess that's to sum it all up, I look at the Redskins as the team out of those three bottom dwellers right now that actually has reason to be hopeful, has something to play for, and there's value in that. And you may not see that in the win column this year, but I think you'll see that in years to come, and maybe someone finally is able to reach Dan Snyder and he'll listen and they can build a team the right way. And Haskins won't have weapons this year. He will not have a lot to play with. But then again, if he can learn to play with players who should be third string running back, second string, you know, players that are not up to par, they can get the all-star offensive lineman in there, then, you know, it's the tough parts now. I think sometimes players come out, you put these amazing teams around them, and their heads blow up, and they think it's all them, and there's this great quarterback, and you have these sophomore slumps. And I do think that the Redskins have reason to think, in spite of a dreadful season, that there is reason to be hopeful going forward, whereas in Miami and Cincinnati right now, until they make some big decisions, it's a mess. And as far as Dalvin Cook, I think he's a beast. I was at the Orange Bowl when he just destroyed and tore Michigan up. And it was another year where they were, you know, had a very successful season defensively. They came in, I think, favored in the game. We were so excited. Florida State, because of Dalvin Cook, really came out the gate, shut him out. And anytime Michigan tried to come back, they'd give the rock to Cook and he'd go for a touchdown. And he seems to me like he's going to become, and I don't want to say he is just because we're one season in, you know, he missed all of last year, but I do think if he can stay healthy, he does seem like he could not only be an MVP candidate this year, because he elevates Kirk Cousins, you know, his the way he's run this year, his ability to help control the clock, you know, the fear he puts in the opposing team's defense and defensive coordinators, and the amount of game planning it takes to account for him, I think has really freed up Kirk Cousins. It just took Kirk Cousins to let himself go, and hence you see the result. But I think Cook gets a lot of credit for that. And Cook is the one from week one, I think MVP, I think you're a leader. And I think you can be a leader no matter what age you are. And you always respect authorities. You respect those that come before you. But he's someone that, even though his stats have had a few off weeks, anytime he's gotten the opportunity, he's run hard. He's been positive. He's supported his team. And he's led by example. And he's, you know, put his money where his mouth is, so to speak, on the field. And it seems all of a sudden like things, clearly winning cures everything. It can make a horrible situation great, and it can make some very disgruntled people happy again. But you have to appreciate the consistency that he's shown. And as you mentioned, he's putting up MVP caliber numbers. So I think that for him to be considered, the key is going to come down to wins. I think that his team's going to have to put up a big number, minimum 11 wins for him to win the award. I think, unfortunately, he's got a guy in Carolina who plays the same position who's just almost recreating what someone can do every week there, which is going to hurt his chances, I think. But you've got, if he's healthy, a perennial MVP candidate. So that's how highly I think of him. And he looks just as good in person when he's playing as he does on TV.
And here's the interesting thing about Dalvin Cook is that last night he had, I think it's over 170 yards from scrimmage, you know, total with rushing and receiving. And if you stack him up against Christian McCaffrey, his stats are better than McCaffrey's. So I think just because of McCaffrey being more of a fan favorite is why Dalvin Cook is being overlooked. But Dalvin Cook is doing more damage with the Minnesota Vikings here. And not to take anything away from Christian McCaffrey, because his starting quarterback isn't there, but Kyle Allen has been playing great football up until this point as well. And I really want to see what the Panthers do at this point in time, because All of the money's been invested in the Cam, and I think they don't go away from Allen at this point in time. But anyway, for Dalvin Cook to be their home run hitter for the Minnesota Viking team, if they start to get him in more schemes where he's in a one-on-one situation with a linebacker or the third level, whether it's a safety or a corner, they'll be running for a while, because he has track speed. He can get up and go. So this is one thing that Dalvin Cook, he can hang his hat on and harp on, is to look for those holes so he can break the game open and get those 15 to 40 or home run hit type of runs. So this is what I think that he's capable of. He's scary fast. He's quick at that. If he had a juke move, he'd be so dangerous, it wouldn't even be funny. But just like you said, his efforts on the offensive side of the ball, whether running or receiving out of the backfield, takes so much pressure off of Kirk Cousins that this game has actually slowed down and become even more easier for this quarterback while he's holding the ball or getting rid of it. So Dalvin Cook can really be considered the MVP by him just making this much of an impact on his offense all across the board, even though he's not passing the ball. But this has actually been helping, you know, Cousins get the ball downfield to Diggs, where Diggs was less motivated, and also Thielen as well, even though Thielen is dealing with an injury. These guys have just found a new revitalized life in this football game.
Now, speaking of those two receivers, do you think all is well in Minnesota? Clearly, Diggs has had a few monster weeks. Thielen, like you said, is dealing with an injury. But right before he was hurt, his numbers were greatly improved. He really seems to me to be the guy that Cousins, if he had to pick, is his go-to, the guy he really trusts. You know, I don't know how close they are off the field. I get the sense that they are. But I am not sure yet that the whole Diggs drama and that situation in Minnesota is settled and done for good. I don't think we've heard the last of it. And, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Because that's certainly something, too, that could detract from Dalvin Cook in the season he's having. And unfortunately, I do think that could be part of the reason that he maybe isn't being considered on the same level as McCaffrey. Though I will say everyone seems to be giving him credit in terms of the fact that he is an elite back. He is putting up monster numbers, but I agree with you that he should be thrown in the MVP mix, and I haven't really heard that yet. I think the focus has more been on Cousins and the drama with the receivers, and I just hope for Dalvin Cook's sake that that's behind them, but I don't get the sense that it is. I think there's something going on with Diggs, and I had hope that he'd end up in New England, but, you know, I'll take Sanu. No problem, very happy for that, but I would not be shocked to see Diggs end up somewhere else before the trade deadline.
Well, just like you like to say, winning cures everything. For them to be on the slate that they're up to right now, they're 4-0 at home. They have another four games at home throughout the remainder of the season. They're doing just fine. I think that more than likely the losses that they took, they weren't involved. And, you know, I hate to talk about this position this way, but, you know, receivers are divas. So if they're not involved, if they're not, you know, getting the ball, they're going to say everything possible to basically be heard or get the quarterback to hear them. Or just to get under the quarterback's skin and just make sure that they get the ball. And that's what Kirk Cousins had to come out and say. He had to address the media to apologize to them because he knew that he was missing them while they were making it known that he was looking at the footage of when they were open and he was just missing these guys. And now he's been a clear-cut one of the top, the top 10, top 15 quarterbacks in the league for what he's been doing as of this season. So I can't, you know, get away from what Cousins has been able to do, especially with this receiving core waking him up. Before, when all of the spats are going around, I thought that one of them would be moved, more than likely Diggs. But now with these guys basically nipping at the heels of the Packers, everybody's going to stay put in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and try to believe that they can get into a postseason bid and make the best of their situation.
Okay. Well, only time will tell, and we have, you know, only a matter of 3 or 4 days, I think, before that October 29th trade deadline passes. So will he or won't he? By this time next week, we'll be able to see which one of us had the right thought process on that. And I do also, just one last note on Cousins. I think you are correct in the way he's been playing lately. It's kind of like the tale of two seasons. And ever since he publicly apologized, I still go back and forth on how I feel about that. But in hindsight, if I had to pick a side now on whether I think it was good or the right thing to do, or I think it was borderline embarrassing and a terrible idea, whatever it did, and it something in him just it seems like he's playing with a clearer mind, with more confidence. And that's what I meant when I said before that I think not only has Dalvin Cook freed up Kirk Cousins and taken pressure off of him and been such a distraction for these defenses that it allows the game to slow down for Cousins. It gives him time to get those receivers, and he's realized it. I don't know if maybe it took a couple of weeks because of what happened last season for Cousins to trust that Dalvin Cook will be there every week. He will contribute. He will play as hard as he can play. He won't quit. He'll have a good attitude, and you can count on that. And it's almost like Kirk Cousins himself also decided he was going to take the pressure off of Kirk Cousins. And he's been playing with a little bit of pep in his step and just doesn't seem to be held down by whatever it was that was holding him back. But I do think that the Diggs thing was just a little bit, there's a little more to it, a little more than just a couple of games where he wasn't getting the ball. I think there's more to the story, and Thielen may also play a role in that in terms of, I don't know, how bad the injury is, if he aggravates it, re-aggravates it. Clearly, they can't afford to be without both of those guys. So I don't know if that'll factor in, but we'll see. And if Kirk Cousins keeps putting up numbers the way he has the last couple of weeks, if he hadn't had a dreadful start to the season, he'd be right up there in that MVP conversation as well. So I think that's something that could hurt Dalvin Cook down the road if Cousins continues to put up these big numbers, big games, and do it consistently. But we'll see. Only time will tell. They play in a tough division. It's still, you know, like you said at the beginning of the show, we're in week 8. I know there's 17 weeks, so it's a little early to say that we're halfway through. But with the exception of a few of these teams, it's, I feel like the theme of the season reminds me of one of my favorite movies, Forrest Gump, and that the NFL right now is like a box of chocolates and you never know what you're going to get. And just when you think you have some of these teams figured out, bam, mm-hmm. there they go and completely prove you wrong. So I am really excited to see how this plays out, and we'll get to discuss that more on the brunch this Sunday. And I've already been ready to go talking about Monday night. So we wanted to get into depth more on the game last night. I'll save my thoughts on that for this weekend and our friend. So I guess you could say we're 1-1 right now. Mm-hmm. in the season series, but I could say 2-1 technically. But I'm excited to see actually what they have to offer as their schedule gets harder. And, just as much as I'm excited to see what the second half of the NFL is going to bring, starting with this weekend's games.
Okay. I want to know about your thoughts, since you did bring up your team and the New England Patriots, with them releasing Michael Bennett and he's heading to the Dallas Cowboys. One, your thoughts on, you know, how the Patriots, they can lose a player and he could be of star caliber. I remember just a few years back when they got rid of Jamie Collins, he's back on the roster now. But probably bringing some of his knowledge and tools that he was able to soak up from New England. How do you feel that he can help impact the Dallas Cowboys, if any? And do you think the Patriots lose a step by losing a guy like Michael Bennett, even though he was one of those committee type of defensive tackles? They didn't have him on the field all as much, but he definitely makes a difference while he's out there on the field.
You know, I do think that he does make a difference. He's capable of having a big impact in the game, but over the years, as you know, most of us Patriots fans are alike in the fact that we have learned not to question the method behind the madness. So, as you mentioned, Bennett has not been on the field as much this season. I know a lot of people have been wondering what's been going on with him. He is a veteran. He is someone that maybe could help the Cowboys not only on the field, but off of the field. Just they seem to be another team that's kind of in limbo. And just when we thought we had them pegged as one of the favorites to maybe get to the Super Bowl and people were anointing Dak the next Tom Brady, you know, they lose to the Jets. So I think they could use some veteran leadership. Clearly, the Patriots know what they're doing. They're chock full of leadership, veterans all over the place. And they practice what they preach. They're consistent with it. So it really depends on the attitude that he brings to Dallas. But clearly there was something that either Belichick, I'm guessing Belichick, I don't know how much Robert Kraft had to do with this, was not seeing and was not happy with not only the effort he was getting on the field, but just his role as a New England Patriot. And wouldn't be surprised to see him go to Dallas. I think some of these guys leave, and to be honest, probably are like, woohoo, I'm free. I can do what I want. I don't have these rules. I don't have this way. But I think a lot more leave and think, oh, man, you know what? I should have tried harder. I should have done this differently. Or I should have trusted the process. There's a reason they win. and that ring is something I really, really want. Or, you know, imagine being a player who shipped off at halfway through the season and his team wins a Super Bowl. You know, he's going to be 34 this season. He's not exactly a spring chicken, as they say. So I don't know that he's one of those players that will circle back to the Patriots. I think that he's kind of shown some disrespect towards Patriots coaches, and I don't know if they're all his elders with all these young coaches out there, but you know in the Patriot world that if you don't fall in line and you talk back and you don't do things their way, you're not going to last long. So if, you know, it makes me think that if Dallas kind of backs off, is one of those teams that's a bit more relaxed, that lets him do his thing, prepare the way he wants to prepare, that when he plays, he may make an impact, but he may go there and have the same situation. And I don't think it's a big loss for the Patriots. I wasn't too disheartened by the news. And I do not think that he's going to end up being the reason that Dallas turns the season around or rights the ship. I think he'll be a role player at best, which is sad considering how much talent he does have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I know you have a decision that you want to set up for me, too, so I definitely want to see if I can get some of what you got in store for this Food for Thought show.
Food for thought. You're making me hungry. I have to go eat some of that food I made in the actual kitchen after this show.
All right.
Here's something I've been thinking about since it seems quarterbacks seem to be kind of a common thread this far or so far tonight. And as we all know, you know, Alabama is going to be without Tua. I don't know. It's hard to imagine. I heard a good analogy using Saquon. It was a similar situation. I know that Tua had that tightrope surgery. I do not think Saquon had that. I think he just rehabbed it. But he was considered to have been a superhuman, super freak healer. And he's still been out or was out, you know, what, 6 or 7 weeks. And again, I'm told it's a similar injury. They're similar in age. I know everybody is different, but it's just really hard to believe that Tua will be back for the LSU game. So that, you know, as you know, last week we talked a little bit of Heisman. We talked a little bit of the playoffs and college football. I had gone with Burrow as my favorite and my pick for the Heisman, and you were Team Tua. I think, unfortunately, this injury not only takes him out of the LSU game, and definitely, I liked LSU, even though they're going to Tuscaloosa, I like them to win that game with a healthy Tua. So I definitely like them to go in there and win and almost secure a playoff spot without Tua playing. But it started to get me wondering, this is the second year in a row, you know, he doesn't miss a lot of time when he's injured, but are these ankle injuries, are these little dings here and there, these little procedures he's needed just to get back or get through the season, is that something that these NFL teams, you know, teams particularly Miami and Cincinnati, should be concerned with, or is it more just the wear and tear of the sport and the way he plays the game versus having an injury concern, knowing that he's not necessarily one of those huge framed quarterbacks that he is smaller in stature?
Well, if they're able to go out there and do it, I'm not worried about the size of the beast any longer, because I look at the likes of Drew Brees, and I respected Drew Brees ever since Purdue, and I look at the likes of Russell Wilson, and Russell Wilson was a quarterback that I didn't think that would end up making it because he was a shorter quarterback, and he was one of those run-first type of quarterbacks, even though when he was in college, he made his throws, but he liked to scramble as well. So I don't like to hold that black cloud over any quarterback that can go out there and make a difference. If they're able to get it done, then go ahead and get it done. There was the likes of somebody out there speaking on behalf of Lamar Jackson saying that he's a running quarterback, but he can throw and he can make completions. and he's also putting his name in the hat of, you know, MVP or most improved player if they have that. But he's definitely been dynamic for this Ravens team who came out of nowhere where a lot of people didn't think it would happen. So I don't like people to hold expectancies or if they fall short to put that over their heads, because somehow, some way, these things will get turned around. But looking at the teams that are struggling, out of the three, the one that surprises me the most is the Cincinnati Bengals. I just don't know what they're going to do with Andy Dalton. I really feel like this is the last season that they can go with him. I don't know if they're going to mid-season bench him. I doubt that. I think they want him to, like, try and get the best or the most out of this season, because they did give him $100 million to look like this. But him to be 0-7 out the gate, and I know they had to deal with some injuries throughout the season, this is the one that is, you know, scary, if you will, because it's like they're going to look into the draft to get another quarterback. I don't know who comes into this team to turn things around. I don't know if a lot of their notables stick around, too, whether it's Boyd, if it's Eifert, if AJ sticks around. I mean, I don't know how that works out, but their quarterback play has to get better. Miami situation, so is the Redskins situation. It's like we talked about with Haskins. I think Haskins runs the show unless Keenum can come and save him and put points up on the board and steal a win somehow. And just like they said, after week one, when I think the score was 59-10 down there in Miami, nobody wants to be there. Until they get people revitalized and Coach Flores can try to instill that Patriot way, which I think is going to be real hard for him to get done, I think this is a real bad situation down there in South Beach. But there's a couple of interesting quarterbacks that may become available if these teams make moves and try to get some of the guys that are behind centered or second stringers. Like, I really wonder about what's happening right now in the Bayou with Teddy Bridgewater, because they're saying that Drew Brees is ready and available to play this Sunday, but do they hurry up and rush him back in, because he is one of the franchise quarterbacks, even though these are his last couple of years. But Bridgewater's on fire. Like, don't move him at this point in time, especially when he's playing this type of football. I think if he's looking sluggish or something, then you could try and insert Drew to try to save the game. But if it's not broke, don't fix it. And he's been riding this course as best as possible. So I really don't know which way to go. Say it again.
I'm about to tell you which way you should go. How's that?
Okay.
I actually think that normally, because I know we've discussed some potential quarterback conflicts we have coming up in the next couple weeks. But I think this is actually, and when we did discuss it, for a reason, this is one I did not bring up. Because to me, Drew Brees is one of the very, very few quarterbacks. And I'm talking rarefied air, Tom Brady-esque, not just for what he's done on the field, but just the aura of Drew Brees, what he is to New Orleans, the fact that he is 40 years old, but he has stuck through there, through thick and thin. You know, it's interesting too, people forget that Brees was supposed to go to Miami before ending up in New Orleans. Miami didn't want him because they said that his shoulder wasn't good enough. He couldn't pass their physical. And here's Bridgewater, same thing, chance to go to Miami. I know he turned them down, but ends up in New Orleans. I think Brees has the right, when he's ready, he's earned the trust, the respect, and he's just earned that gangsta card, you know, like the GOAT card, to say, hey, I'm ready to go, I'm healthy, I feel good, this is my team, so I'm going to play this week. Unlike a situation you have in, let's say, Kansas City, where you have a quarterback who is your franchise, is your future, has proven himself, and is still young, and it's not like he's going to go out there all of a sudden and not move around and not take risks. You know, Brees was a fluke injury, and he's ready to come back. The thumb's good to go. They also need to get some work in before the playoffs, you know, gel back with the team. It is a different type of quarterback in there, obviously. So I think that this is one of the very, very rare situations where you would pull a 5-0 starter when your first-string quarterback is ready to come back and says he's healthy. Now, what I do think Bridgewater has done enough of, and part of why I think that Breeze will play when Breeze is ready, is that he has been, in my opinion, auditioning to be the successor to Drew Brees. You know, when he came to New Orleans, clearly there was something about that situation that he really liked, to go somewhere, take less money, where you're guaranteed at best to be a backup quarterback versus having a chance to start. You know, Miami is obviously a desirable destination to live, all of that. So I think that, you know, a couple years ago, Bridgewater decided that he was going to work his tail off and he was going to give it a shot and go to New Orleans with the goal of taking over for Drew Brees once Brees hangs it up, which I do not think will be this season. I think he'll play next season as well. The only way I could see him walking off after this season would be if that dream scenario of a Super Bowl win came to fruition. Maybe he rides off into the sunset, but at the same time, I think Brees is like the Brett Favre's, the Tom Brady's, that'll just make him want to come back even more because he'll get a taste of it and he'll want one more. So glad to hear that Brees is healing well. And like I said, if he says he's ready, he's not a selfish guy. He's a team player. So there's another area where you know that he's not going to come back too soon, that he's not going to rush it because he trusts in his backup and they're winning. So I say give him the reins as soon as he says that he wants them back. And it's a lot more comforting to know that if he does go down, they're in great shape. And that, you know, again, he's a 40-year-old quarterback. So as we get further into the season, this experience that Bridgewater had now, you know, it like I said earlier with Haskins, it's invaluable. And just a quick note on Haskins really quick. The one thing I think is key is now that you've named him the starter, you can pull him in a game. If he's, you know, if he's seeing ghosts or I see dead people, like a certain quarterback the other night, take him out of there. You don't want to traumatize the poor kid, but he is now your starter for the rest of the year. Like I said, Case Keenum, not taking the team or the franchise anywhere. You know, he has a concussion, the hit that took him out. Again, it's very easy for me to say this watching the game. I thought he held onto the ball way, 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 way too long. There was a giant looking gap where he could have easily read it, looked like he could have run it in, didn't make the decision quick enough, and bam, he's out. So, you know, I think he's serviceable. I think it was a good idea to bring him in to try and hopefully mentor Haskins, give him time to come along, but you give Haskins that job, you cannot pull the hook on him as a starter. I think there's no reason for it. So I just had to throw that in there because that would be disaster. And if that happens, not next year, but the year after, Washington is going to be looking for a quarterback as well. But
there's going to be a lot of opportunities for a lot of these quarterbacks to be moved around the league. And you already have people saying the likes of Cam Newton ended up in the likes of, whether it could be in Chicago because of the Rivera familiarity, if you will. So I want to see where a lot of these quarterbacks do end up in the coming season. But just like you said, this could be an audition for Bridgewater to remain down there, and likely because he already knows the system and he's comfortable and he's a mobile quarterback. He's making the right throws and kind of smaller stature too, like Drew Brees. They wouldn't be missing a beat because he's already doing well with his offense as it is.
And we know Sean Payton's not going anywhere. Kamara's young. Clearly, the team responds well to Bridgewater. So that's like I said, it's almost a seamless transition when the time comes because of this time he has. You know, obviously there's always moving parts and players come and go, but New Orleans over the last several years, considering where they have come from, where I guess people used to wear brown bags over their head to watch the Aints, you know, I think they've become one of the better, you know, the better run franchises, especially in their response to Katrina and just the way they run the franchise, what they've done for that city, how they've done it as a team. the way the team carries itself. I think even last year in the, you know, NFC Championship game is a good example. Of course, some people said things and people were feeling some type of way, but overall as a team, considering what happened and the impact it potentially had on all their lives, you know, they handled that fairly well. And I think Drew Brees is a big part of that. And I think Teddy Bridgewater, it's important to Brees. And I think maybe the franchise at the moment that you also have a Drew Brees-esque personality take over. So not only is it a similar stature, but Bridgewater seems like a team guy. He seems like he'll do whatever it takes. You know, he does not need to be like some of these quarterbacks, young and old. He does not need to be in the limelight. He does not need to be the star, the stud of the show. And also, when you're thinking about just how out of control these salaries are getting with quarterbacks, Bridgewater has proven, and it's not like they've been playing slum teams. They've been beating good teams, teams that even with Drew Brees, a lot of people may have picked against them. But he is proving that it's going to be a seamless transition and that they're in good shape. And I do think that they're going to be one of the teams to beat as the season winds down. So I hope he does well. And sorry, what I was getting at before is that he will not break your bank. You're not going to have to spend $45 million, and I know I'm exaggerating some, a year to keep him. I think he is a realistic person. He's a smart guy, and he is pretty well able to kind of self-evaluate and know his role with the team. Again, there'll be no ill will when Brees comes back, why that will be seamless. And it will allow New Orleans to have more money to spend to really put the weapons in place around him, because that is the one thing. I do think Bridgewater needs to have a guy like Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara. He needs to have some of those studs around him just because he's one of those players that seems to do everything well, but he's not going to ever be your Pat Mahomes type quarterback. But I really do. I like to see him do well. I love a good comeback story, and I give him a lot of credit for making some of the decisions that he's made. And hopefully, too, it'll also show some of these young players that it's not always the right decision to chase the money or follow the shiny object or take the fastest route, that it's important to think on a long-term scale and think about your future. And things work out sometimes when you do that, believe it or not.
So we are getting near the end of the show. I do want to see how you feel about this World Series right now, with Houston down 2-0 in the series, and they're going to Washington. Your thoughts on this series, as the Astros had put up a run early in the game as well?
Well, you know, first of all, I had picked Washington and wanted Washington going into the series. It is not going the way that I thought it would. I did not expect them to put up a 12th spot against this rotation, really anyone in the rotation. But I do think that Washington is, you know, going to inevitably lose a game or two. This pitching staff is too good to go in there and get swept. I like Washington to win the series in six. I think Houston's had a lot going on behind the scenes, clearly. I think that they probably lost a lot of fan support, especially from people who are not hardcore fans or not Houston natives. And I just wonder, I guess, myself with this situation with the assistant general manager, you know, and his thoughts on acquiring a player that had been, you know, involved with more than one domestic violence issue that I have to figure that it's got to be a distraction to the team. It's like you said, we're getting to the end of the show, and I am not trying to open up a discussion on that topic. I would love to one night go into that and its involvement in sports, but in this case, it has to be a distraction because it's something that is so polarizing and you have so many different opinions emotionally attached. I do, like I said, wonder if they fired him because they were almost backed into the corner where they had to save any sort of face in public relations, or if the franchise really is upset with what was said and the manner in which it was said, because I know that it's just an unfortunate thing that that's become the story of the World Series. It really is. You have a great team like Washington, the nation's capital, coming up on an election year. Like we've discussed, their football franchise has little to no existing fan base. The so-called Goliath going up against Houston, who's been through a lot as a city lately, and just kind of the difference, the difference of the markets, the sizes, you know, all these great pitchers involved. And I just think it's a shame that so much has been taken away, so much attention has been, and I do think it's going to end up having an impact on the outcome of the series. It's helped Washington get off to the 2-0 start. I think Houston, like I said, will get it together, but Washington's going to come out as a champ at the end of the day.
I think the Nationals can pull this out. I'm just fearing that the Nationals pull off a sweep. If they get this win today, I think that whole D.C. area will go crazy for game four. The one thing that favors the Nationals right now is that they're in National League rule. The pitcher has to bat, but Greinke is pitching, so he can hit also. So this actually helps Houston somewhat. But the DH is taken out of this game, but you got to think about the likes of Houston and their offense. They're able to get it done. And, just the notables on that roster that can make things happen offensively, whether it's Correa, whether it's Bregman or Altuve. These guys, they're named players, even Springer, Connecticut's own. So, and I follow him well. So this is going to be a tough one for the Nationals to get done. I think they can get it done, but they are in an uphill battle in this match today because Greinke is a pitcher that can hit. So it's not like they're missing that much at the DH position.
I hear you.
Okay.
I hear you.
So we are here at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Like we got, we're like you said, we eat up a whole hour. So believe me, I've been fed today. I came and ate real well today. Anything that you like to plug, promote, or shout out as we walk out of the door, excellent stuff today once again.
Yes, actually, other than the usual Go 7 Red, last regular season game tomorrow, your Stanford Knights actually played them very tough last week. It was 14-7. So good luck to Mikey, Lincoln, Brad, Liam, and the boys. But really what I want to bring up really quick, I think this is someone who almost warrants an entire show. And luckily, as you guys will see going forward, I think that with these Friday nights, Timeless and I are just starting to cook things up, and we have big plans in store. So hopefully we'll have more time together in the future. But just a shout out to Antoinette Tony Harris. I'm hoping a lot of you have heard her story. I know ESPN has been doing a piece on her this week. I was familiar with it beforehand, but it is one of the most inspiring and truly amazing stories I've ever heard. Just quickly, because I know we're out of time, she is the first female non-kicker to get a scholarship to play football in college as a cornerback at Central Methodist University, which in itself it tells you how tough this girl is, what she's been through, what a triumph that must be for her, for women, for sports. And that isn't even the tip of the iceberg. This girl was in four foster homes before she was 14. She battled ovarian cancer at 18, one of the rarest forms, lost 70 pounds, and within a year worked her way back to earn this scholarship, not only guaranteeing she'll be the first female to ever play cornerback in college, but she just got herself a free education, which is priceless, as we all know. So big shout out to her. It's people like that, other than my loved ones, that get me up and going every single morning. So Tony, as she likes to be called, keep doing you. Thanks for inspiring us, and can't wait to see you shut those boys down in college.
Oh, wow. Listen, you always learn something every day, and just to see her at the cornerback position, it's not like you would hear, like, outside of the kicker, you would hear probably a quarterback the girl can throw, or, you know, and that's probably the only position I could think of if she's playing football, and I'm wondering if she's D2 or D3. I don't know if she's D1. I doubt if that's a D1 school, but nevertheless, I don't want to hold anything against her, man. She did what she needed to do, and the ultimate thing, like you said, she earned a free education off of the athletic ability that she was able to do, and just to hear the thing that she fought through, all of the endeavors to get through, and health-wise and life-wise, I mean, God bless her, man. And we will
time,
be digging into
time. Let's get to know the story. Get to know the story. You'd appreciate it.
Well, I will be feeding off of you. We will bring this right back to the kitchen shortly. Shortly, she said we might be having more than one show with Aaron and Thomas. Y'all just stay tuned with that. We got this in the work. He will be discussing
that. We're working
that
on it.
How we can put this together. Okay, Sports City, let me close out Sports City Chefs. You already know what we do. We'll be back here Sunday morning, 11 a.m., with the brunch, the notables that you know. And, oh, yes, it's a little personal this Sunday. It's Detroit versus the Giants. So I know it's going to get pretty ugly in the kitchen, Sports City. I already know how that's going to go. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the Chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.